Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 151 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Richard Kirkham of Kirkham Movie A Day and the Shepherd of the Lamb. Welcome back to the show, Richard.
Glad to be with you, Rob. Hoping for a good week here.
Yeah. Yeah, again, there's stuff that's going on here. there's always stuff going on. You know, I'm never concerned about that. You know, I never look at a movie and say, oh, I'm not going to have anything to talk about. You know, we'll find what to talk about.
There's always something.
That's right, because it's not like it's a blank screen or something like that. That would be more difficult to talk about. A completely blank screen. A screen with words on it, you have what to talk about. A screen with nothing. I guess you could just talk about space. That's as close as one can get. Okay, so why don't we actually start off by Richard? Why don't you tell everyone your history with this movie? Do you remember when you first saw it? Is it a movie that you like to revisit or not or whatever?
Well, yeah, I'm happy to talk about those things. I first saw it at the AMC theaters at Universal Studios, and we went to an early screening. I'm not sure if it was a Thursday preview or if there was an advanced screening that maybe we had gotten a notification about, but I know it was the week before it opened that we saw it. And the movie was obviously very affecting, and I responded to it, I think, the way most people did. I was moved by it and enjoyed it. I've seen it maybe three or four times over the years since then. It's a movie that I think is a little bit tough sometimes because of the harsh reality that it depicts. And those things are not always entertaining. And so you don't always jump to that as your first choice when you're thinking about, well, what am I going to put on Friday night or Saturday night? There have been numerous times when I thought it would be appropriate to watch the movie again and kind of re-experience some of those emotions. And I've done that, like I said, maybe three or four times since the movie opened.
And I just gave you an opportunity to do it also.
Yes. Which is a good reason to watch it.
Yeah.
Okay. Which I did yesterday.
There's no time like the present. What do you think about the bait and switch that they do on us here, where they make us believe that this is a story of John Miller, and in the end we find out that it's not?
Well, I was never sure that it was, you know, I was never convinced that it was Miller that we were supposed to be seeing at the beginning of the film. I was pretty ambiguous on that, and so I didn't feel like it was a terrible surprise to me. However, I've got to tell you, I've gotten a bad habit in the last year or two of watching reaction videos on YouTube. Have you seen those?
For this movie or in general?
In general.
In general, I've seen some of them. I was never much impressed with them, you know.
Yeah, no, they're... what I'm interested in is watching other people react to things that they are seeing for the first time. And there's a collaborative, or I should say a guy, or there are two or three people who collate these reaction videos into segments, particular segments of movies. So for example, this morning, I watched about 15 reactors reacting to the very sequence that we're talking about this week, and the reveal at the end that Ryan was the person, the elderly gentleman at the beginning and the end of the film. And I would say 80% of them were really surprised. They did, in fact, not know what was coming. They thought it was going to be Miller. And when Miller died in the scene, sorry, spoiler alert.
Yeah, I'm assuming anyone who's made it this far already knows that.
Yeah. So when Miller died, they were all surprised, and certainly the emotional reactions in those videos is great because people are tearful. It was really another way of experiencing these films. And then of course we get that final sequence, which is, I think, in somebody else's minute.
Yes. It won't be in your minute. We won't be able to discuss that in detail here, but we'll actually be talking about it next week with the morphing scene.
Yeah.
You know, the scene that turns this movie into a sci-fi film.
That's one way to think of it.
Find out that someone's a chameleon. You know, it's interesting watching reaction videos, because my problem with reaction videos is, you have to really believe that these people are reacting genuinely. You know, because again, if they're being filmed and they're told, okay, watch this movie. I mean, I've seen movies. Once you know that there's a twist in any particular movie, you're going to be sitting there waiting for the twist.
You're anticipating it a little bit, yeah.
Exactly. That's the thing. And in some movies, it's anticlimactic because of that. Because you say, wait a second. Okay, fine. And sometimes you watch a movie where you know that there's some sort of twist. And then... the twist happens and you're like, okay, but I'm still waiting for a bigger twist. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I think is kind of interesting about these reaction videos is that most of the people who are doing them are in fact in their 20s and 30s and haven't seen these movies and don't know anything about those movies. They're not like you and I, who are movie fanatics, who have seen hundreds of movies and love talking about films and have watched them over and over again. And we don't think anything strange about watching a movie that's 20 or 30 years old. That's normal to us. But most of these people who are doing these videos, that's kind of an alien thing for them. If it didn't come out in their lifetime, if it didn't come out in the last 5 minutes, they're not even thinking about it.
Right. Okay. There's something to that. But then you have to also convince them that it's worth their while to watch it. You know, maybe they're doing it just for the hits. That could be also.
Oh, that's, you know, they get subscribers. I don't know what their, you know, financial motivation is. Some of them, I'm sure, have monetized their videos and have that kind of, I don't care about that kind of stuff. That's their business and that's fine. I'm just interested in watching people react to movie. You know, I've seen the movies that they're reacting to. The reaction videos that I watch are always the ones that I've seen a movie for, and I'm going, how did somebody else react to that moment in The Sixth Sense when, you know, the ring fell? Or, you know, what else happens? You know, how do people feel when the Balrog shows up in Lord of the Rings? You know, it's kind of cool to see people seeing something for the first time. It's like going to the movies with a friend who hasn't seen the movie before and kind of enjoying their experience vicariously.
Right. Okay. That's true. I actually remember that I had, what movie was it? Memento. I'd heard some things about Memento before watching it. And basically I was sitting there watching a completely different movie with the other people that I was watching it with, you know, in the theater. You know, they all thought one thing and I knew something else. And so my experience was not the same as theirs from that perspective.
I could see that. Yeah.
It always reminds me of the story that I was told. It's somewhat sad, but that these two guys, they have this video that they put up on YouTube. Their father is a huge, huge, huge fan of The Empire Strikes Back. But he has some sort of disability where he doesn't have, I think, maybe short-term memory. I think that's the idea. So every
it's some kind of dementia, right, some kind of memory issue.
Right. Yeah. So every week they rewatch it with him just to be able to see how happy he gets when he sees, you know, the scene when he finds out that Darth Vader is Luke's father. You know, that type of thing. So it's a bittersweet type of story.
Yeah, well, that's a kind of a benefit. I've always thought that it would be great to be able to take a pill to erase your memory of a movie so you could watch it for the first time again some other point. That would be nice, because there are lots of movies that'd be great to experience for the first time again. You can't ever do that, of course. Correct. except in a circumstance a little bit like that.
Right. And nobody really wants to be in that type of circumstance.
No, they don't.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I don't know if I would want to think of
that. I got a morbid example to tell you. When my mother passed away, that's when I discovered how far along my father was in his Alzheimer's, because I had to tell him every day for 2 weeks that his wife had passed away.
Okay.
He didn't remember.
And what happened after 2 weeks?
I stopped answering his question. Oh, okay. He would ask me where she was.
I thought it was going to be really
said, I don't know. Yeah, well, it took me a while to figure out that he was not going to hold on to this.
Oh, wow. How long did he live after your mother passed?
Well, he lived another 7 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I think it's a good thing after 2 weeks you stopped telling him. That would have gotten a little repetitious.
Yeah, it was... He, it's a terrible thing when people go through that kind of experience, but it was, it's like he's in the house and he's looking around going, well, where's Phyllis?
Right.
And I'm going, Pop. And I'd have to explain it to him, and he would have an emotional reaction to it. And, later on I'd have to do it again. And I just figured, I don't know was the better answer.
Right. Well.
Sorry to bring it down.
No, don't bring me down at all.
The story about the guys sharing the movie with their dad, that's a much more positive way of having an experience with this.
That's true. Very true. Okay, so why don't we actually talk a little bit about Saving Private Ryan?
Sure, sorry about
Not
that.
Not at all. You don't need to apologize. Richard, I'm open to talking about everything. Anything and everything. I like going down rabbit holes. And there we go.
Okay.
And especially for magicians. So, there we go. So minute 151 begins with Ryan helping Mike up and ends with Miller still, being a little bit out of it and being hard of hearing. We ended things on Friday with we're getting towards the end of this battle, the Battle of Rommel, and, Mike got shot and at this point, Ryan goes over to him to help him and picks him up and tries to walk him, back to the Alamo. And then I love that we see Ryben right behind him, and he's there. And, Ryben has turned into a very heroic character in these last few minutes. There are parts of the movie where you might assume, incorrectly, that he's somewhat of a coward when it comes to fighting. I mean, even at the beginning, we have him on the beach and he doesn't have his BAR and he's on the beach without a gun, and he wasn't thinking about any way of trying to get another gun until he was ordered that that's what he has to do.
Yeah, I never got the impression that he was cowardly. I always had the impression, though, that he had to have somebody tell him what to do. And he had to agree that doing it was the right thing.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Which is not necessarily the military way that things function.
Correct.
Somebody telling you what to do, that part, yes. You're offering an opinion on it? That's part of the whole story here, following orders despite the fact that they don't necessarily make sense to you.
Correct. That is definitely true. But again, I love Ryben. He's my favorite character in this movie. So, I'm not disparaging the character at all, but
up until now,
he doesn't step up as much as he does here. Obviously there right. are other times where he's fighting and where he's doing things. I mean, even when they were going to go take out the radar tower. So, he didn't want to take part, as I said about the beginning, with the beach scene with all that stuff. So, when he needs to fight, he will fight, but here, we saw just from maybe it was about 2 weeks ago when we were talking about it that, at the beginning of the battle, he's like, okay, I'm going and I'm going to go take out those 20 millimeters. And, he does all he can to do it. And we can see that he's doing something a little more heroic than you might have expected from him. Let's put it that way, from that perspective. Yeah. And, he just continues that here. And then we get a shot from behind of the tank rolling through the streets with a bunch of German soldiers flanking it on the side, using it as cover. And then they move forward towards the Alamo. And then Ryben, once again steps up and he goes, "Tiger coming across the bridge." And he starts shooting his BAR at them while he's giving cover to Miller, who's trying to lay out the detonation cord in order to set it up. You know, it sort of reminds me of the Bridge of the River Kwai, the way that he's doing it. You know.
Yeah.
But here they don't have to worry about the tide. and we see guys shooting from both sides of the bridge, you know, at each other, trying to stop one another. I mean, it even looks like there are Germans on the bridge at this point. Yeah, there's like two guys.
They're certainly getting closer.
I see two guys that are behind a bunch of sandbags. One with a helmet, one with not. I got to tell you, the one without the helmet sort of looks like Steamboat Willie, even though I know that we're only going to see him a little bit later in this week. But still, it's interesting to see that it looks like him. I wonder if it's a continuity error or not, of having him there. And then we see the German tank commander giving instructions, telling his men where they're supposed to fire. He like points at them, which is very funny. He's basically pointing for us because the guy inside has no idea where he's pointing. You know, the driver or the,
yeah. however, you know, we have our cameras on right now. There are plenty of times when I'm talking to people on my show and we don't use the cameras, and I gesticulate and point, and I don't stop my kinesic means of communication simply because somebody else isn't watching.
True, but still.
But it is funny.
Yeah, but again, you have a guy in a tank that's supposed to be pointing to someone telling them where to shoot. You would expect him. Actually, maybe you're right. He's talking to them and pointing at the same time.
Yeah.
So he's saying, okay, you see that building over there or whatever it is.
I'm sure he's giving directions. 10 o'clock, 4 o'clock, whatever.
Okay, there is something to that. It just looks funny. that's the way I look at it. And at this point, the tank shoots, and we see a building just completely get obliterated right behind Miller, and Miller gets all this debris showered down on him. And it even, his helmet flies off, and there's even like what looks like a sandbag, thankfully an empty sandbag, that lands on his head, that he pulls off and takes it out, moves it out of the way. You think that that was deliberate, or do you think that that was just something in the middle of the explosion that happened?
I'm sure that the debris are deliberate. Which debris goes where is probably not something they could control very much. And I'm sure that they used an empty sandbag with the notion that they didn't want to put their star on the ground with a 50-pound sandbag being dropped potentially on him.
Yeah, probably not. That wouldn't be it wouldn't be very productive.
No.
Not at all. And at this point, Miller then, you can see that he's a little bit out of it. And the sound, once again, like we had in the beginning of this movie, the sound gets distorted. And we can, because we're supposed to hear basically what Miller is hearing or feel the ramifications of having an explosion right nearby you. They want us to give us the, to allow us to use our senses to understand what he's potentially going through.
It's a callback to that earlier scene where he's interviewing a soldier who might know where Ryan is. Then the guy has gone temporarily deaf also, and they keep encouraging him to speak up.
Right, when Mendelsohn, they're telling him to write it down. That's right. That's very true. But again, we don't know if his back to that character. We don't know if his name is Mendelsohn or Michelson, because he is called one of them. I think he's called Mendelsohn, but in the credits, he's Michelson. So it could be either. it doesn't make a difference either way. You know, Ryan Hurst.
It's not keeping me up.
No, Ryan Hurst is great in this movie in that role. You know, I like watching that. At this point, we hear, the reverberating sounds that Miller is supposedly hearing, and we see that he tries to stand up. Also, he does not look like he is steady enough. And I also like the fact that we see blood splotches, on his face, but it's not like someone else's blood or anything like that. It was because he was hit by the debris. So the realism of that, works also. He's been hit by, I guess you maybe call it shrapnel. Is debris from a building considered shrapnel, or shrapnel is only if it's metal?
No, yeah, I think it would. I think that you'd call it shrapnel.
Yeah, and he looks over and he sees, Ryben still shooting while Ryben's being shot at. And then we hear someone say behind him, "Captain, get behind something. And then we see that it's Ryben who's actually screaming at him. You know, Ryben, again, Ryben has turned into Rambo here. You know, he's shooting and he's also trying to keep Miller as alive as possible with this whole thing. And he's basically taking charge of this whole situation.
The captain can't even respond. Yeah,
so Miller's completely out of it. There's no question about that. The way that Tom Hanks does a great job of making us believe that his character is truly out of it right now with everything that he's seen. And then we see what Miller is watching. There's a German soldier that runs towards one of the soldiers, defending Rommel. And, the GI is trying to fend off the first guy, and then two other guys show up, and he decides he's going to start running away. And, another German gets him with with the bayonet of his gun, and the guy just falls down, and they start, really beating him. So, we've been keeping count of how many Allied casualties in this battle. So we're going to add another one. We're up to 16. This is the 16th defender of Rommel, who unfortunately won't make it back home at this point. And then we get one final second of the minute as Miller is still standing around stunned, trying to figure out what's going on. And that is how this minute ends. So did you have anything else you wanted to mention about this minute, Richard?
No, not at this point. I assume that, when somebody loses their hearing in a situation like that, it could either be temporary or it might end up being permanent. As it turns out, it doesn't really matter one way or the other for poor Captain Miller.
Yeah, Miller isn't going to need it after this. That is true.
Yeah.
We'll never find out if it's let's put it this way. Later on, even after he's shot, he's not as disoriented as he was beforehand. So it's somewhat simmered, whatever it is. If he would have lived, he might have had what's called tinnitus for the rest of his life.
He could very well have, yeah, that would make sense.
But, we unfortunately will never know. It's one of those sad parts of this movie that, we'll never know what Miller really, really believes after all of these events of what happened.
This is true. But what we'll know is what my favorite John Williams scores are.
Yeah, of course, because that's the segment we're going to be getting to right now. Very good. So every Monday we have a segment called Maestro Monday, where my guests will give their top five John Williams scores, themes. I have a feeling I know what one of yours is going to be, and it probably will be your number one, but who knows? You might surprise.
I don't think you're going to find many surprises on this list, although I've appreciated almost all of John Williams' scores. I was, you know, when I made up the list, I had 10 things that I was choosing from and trying to organize them a little bit. And the ones I left off, you know, they're pretty damn impressive, you know.
Okay,
I think two of them were Academy Award winners.
You can mention, honorable mentions afterwards also. That's fine.
I'll do that afterwards. Well, my number five would be probably the most distinct score on my list, and that's Catch Me If You Can, which is a much more jazz-infused score than you get in most of the other films that he's doing, which are very orchestral. This is, you know, it's more subdued, fewer instruments, but they're used in a very interesting way. I really like that. And the theme song that they use in the credits is terrific.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
Number four for me is Raiders. Raiders of the Lost Ark is just a fantastic movie, and the Raiders March is, you could plant it in any number of places and feel like you should stand up and cheer.
Oh, for sure.
Number three is Superman. Is a personal example of how great this theme was. For a number of years, my daughter used it as the ringtone for me when I called her.
Really? You think I would have guessed that she would have used something else for you, but I won't spoil what that could be.
Well, you have to hear it, and it would be, you probably wouldn't get that ringtone and hear it for 20 seconds.
No, well, you can choose where you start a ringtone. It doesn't have to start at the beginning.
Yeah, but why would you start someplace that was imperfect?
In order to be able to answer the phone.
That's right. All right, and then number two is Star Wars. And with a little notation here, I think that the Star Wars films are great. I do like the Imperial March from Empire Strikes Back as well, but I do think that the score from the first Star Wars movie is the one that is most meaningful to me, at least.
Okay.
And you know what number one is.
Yeah, of course, Jurassic Park.
No, you've got me confused with like your last guest.
No, actually, he's not my last guest. He was I recorded with him for...
Your previous guest is what I meant.
No, the previous person I recorded with, not for this season.
I'm out of a sequence.
I already started next season, so there you go.
Oh, never mind. Anyway, yeah, Jaws.
Yes.
Is number one. You know, the most iconic theme with just a couple of cello notes. But there, you know, the... chase scene is thrilling adventure music, and if you've ever seen the movie without the music, I saw a presentation of John Williams' music at the Hollywood Bowl many years ago, and they were showing the clips with and without the music, and it's amazing how much it enhances each sequence.
That's what John Williams definitely contributed to the world of music, or the world of movies, by showing us how amazing music can change the way you see a movie.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, obviously there were, you know, a lot of famous conductors beforehand, but I think John Williams obviously surpassed them all and showed everybody, even his mentors, he showed them, you know, that things can be done very, very differently in a very different way. I'm assuming you've seen By John Williams.
I have not. I haven't watched it. I know it's out, but I'm kind of waiting because we have a concert with the Austin Symphony coming up in another month where they are featuring John Williams' music, and I thought I would wait and watch that when I get the chance.
Okay. Okay, that is fair. Okay, so thank you for that list, Richard. Would you like to tell everyone where they can find Richard Kirkham?
Oh, well, I can locate it on my home site. It's Kirkham A Movie A Day is the name of the site. I've got a Blogspot location that you can find at kirkhamclass.blogspot.com, or if you type in kirkhamamovieaday.com, that'll take you to the WordPress site. It's a doppelganger site. They have the same content. The there is a more organized way of finding material on the Blogspot page, because I have several pages listed for other projects that are easier to access there. And of course, on the Lambcast, which is the weekly podcast that we do for the LAM, which is the Large Association of Movie Blogs, you can find the LAM on Facebook. Just search by LAM, or Lambcast, also on Facebook and Twitter. And we do have an Instagram account, but I don't do as much on Instagram as I should, probably.
Yeah, I have that same problem. I'm very backlogged in keeping my Instagram up to date with all the episodes that have come out. You know, I'm gonna have to go one day and put in like 40 episodes or something like that. You know, one of these days I'll get around to it.
That would only take care of your last week.
No, I'm not talking about movies. I'm talking about my podcast. So the podcast is only five episodes a week. But nice try, Richard. No, I'm backlogged on my movie reviews also. I'm like 1,300 movies backlogged. That's how backlogged I am.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I think last month I wrote reviews for 29 of the 100 movies that I saw. You know, so little by little, one of these days I'll hopefully catch up. That's my goal. I keep telling myself
I'm three behind right now, and I'm feeling guilty about it.
Oh, I've been feeling guilty for the last 4 years. Yeah. There have been months when I've done all 100, you know, so, it's a question of finding the time. Time is of the essence, and time is the ultimate thing that we never can get more of, you know, okay, you know, that's what it is. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter. You can find me most of the time on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Come on, Rob. Earn it.
In my solitude, you haunt me with reveries of days gone by.